What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, Pete Buttigieg on crumbling infrastructure.
We're not trying to get gold-plated water pipes to everybody. We're just trying to get ones that don't have any lead.
And the bipartisan talks crumbling, too. The transportation secretary weighs in on all of it.
It's Secretary Mayor Pete.
I'll take it. I don't know if it rolls off the tongue.
Then AT&T divesting media assets and going back to phones. Sarah Fisher of Axios.
It's great for the first time we're hearing great things about the fundamentals. We're not being distracted by this media stuff that, quite frankly, is not going to be as important to their business long term.
Those stories plus Elon Musk on Dogecoin and Bitcoin.
He doesn't dump.
Bitcoin.
Everybody dumps, right? What's that? There's a book written for kids called that, isn't there?
I think it's Everybody Poops.
Oh, okay.
And keeping it safe when you need more power.
The Kern family should sponsor an underground effort.
It's Thursday, July 22nd, 2021. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Feels like a Friday. It's not just yet, but hang in there. It's the summer. Thursday's a really good day, too.
We've got an update now on the bipartisan infrastructure bill. Yesterday, a key procedural vote on the plan failing to pass the full Senate. That after Republicans united in opposition. The measure was a placeholder for the actual bill. Now, yesterday morning, Senator Bob Portman told us the bill was just not ready, and the Republicans made it clear they weren't going to vote for it.
Today, we're not going to be able to support moving forward. We will be able to on Monday, and I hope that's what the majority leader decides to do, is to put this vote off till Monday. If he doesn't, he'll offer the vote again on Monday, I believe, and we'll be ready to go.
Democratic leader Chuck Schumer calling it a minor setback as he reserves the right to reintroduce the bill for a vote at any time.
I have been very clear about what this vote is. This vote is only the first step in the legislative process on the Senate floor. This vote is not a deadline to have every final detail worked out. It is not an attempt to jam anyone.
I don't know the rules, but he had to vote no yesterday to reserve the right to bring it back at any time, and it looks like Monday, even Rob, is quoted
Portman
as saying
yesterday.
Probably. But they were 11 votes short. They weren't even close, so it wasn't going to happen yesterday, but the 11, or I forget how many, Rob has a letter signed by, enough, looks like they got 60.
He said there's still some key
Monday.
Points that they're negotiating with
right,
the White
that
House
they
that they want to see finished
but
up.
But they're minor, and they're going to go ahead with it. And there's, you know, a lot of Republicans think, why would you, knowing what's coming after it, why would you go ahead? And there, we asked him yesterday, and he said, because we need
right
infrastructure.
Thing to do. Yeah, right. Said, right.
Well, he says it's the right thing to do. Ethereum, along with Bitcoin, rising yesterday after Tesla CEO Elon Musk said he owns the cryptocurrency as well. He made the comment at the B-Word conference hosted by the Crypto Council for Innovation. Musk has been accused of using his celebrity to move the price of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. He addressed that during the conference.
I might pump, but I don't dump. it's not a case of, I definitely do not believe in getting the price high and selling or anything like that. And I would like to see Bitcoin succeed.
SpaceX owns it, he owns it, and Tesla owns it.
Right.
So
Kathy Wood suggested that there are other companies that might start adding it to their balance sheets too to act as a hedge. And interesting.
Well, we've heard that. I mean, we've heard it from both sides. We've heard, Kathy Woods will say that and Mike Novogratz will say that. And then we'll have people like, Larry Fink will say that nobody's talking to him about this in sort of either the sovereigns or true corporate America. So I sort of hard to know who's actually, one has a much greater incentive than the
right,
other.
But there has been more adoption than anyone thought in the last 12 months, a lot more mainstream type action. That's why it's had the move it's had. Still, the move is, it's still 32,000. It was at like 4,000. Couple of years ago, 4,000. Musk also said Tesla would likely start accepting Bitcoin for purchases again for vehicles. He said he wanted to confirm that the percentage of renewable energy use for Bitcoin mining is at 50, above 50%. He confirmed that he still holds Bitcoin, and as he said, he doesn't dump. Also, his companies do too. Tesla and SpaceX Bitcoin. Must, huh?
Bitcoin.
Doesn't put that, everybody dumps, right? What's that? There's a book written for kids called that, isn't there?
I think it's Everybody Poops.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Different. Musk also explained, thank you. Musk also explained.
What is going on?
You know the book, Everybody Poops, Andrew?
It's true.
Musk also explained his love of Dogecoin, which started as a joke, like that one, but it's since gained traction.
The Doge community, I think, is somewhat irreverent, obviously, and has great memes and loves dogs, and I love dogs and memes, and it doesn't take itself too seriously.
The price of Dogecoin also rose on Mr. Musk's comments.
California utility company PG&E said it plans to bury 10,000 miles of power lines to reduce wildfire risk throughout Northern California. The estimated cost, up to $20 billion. It's a reversal of the company's earlier stance that doing so would be prohibitively expensive. Company's CEO, Patty Poppe, took over in January of this year. She said the company had long argued that undergrounding was too expensive, but now they believe it's too expensive not to bury those wires underground. PG&E's equipment has ignited more than 20 California wildfires in just the past several years that have collectively killed more than 100 people and burned thousands of homes. Most of the fires were sparked when trees or branches touched the company's wires. I've always thought, not just in California,
right,
but as an infrastructure plan across America, if you want just jobs,
right,
bury the wires.
Right.
And by the way,
have
you looked in the sky in New York? I mean, have you seen that some of these wildfires?
Oh, yeah, it's come all the way over here.
Is that
what's causing it here, too?
Red sun,
yes.
Red moons.
Two days ago when we had the
if you look up in the sky, that's what's going on. So when people say,
saw it out west,
you know,
recently,
one thing's over here versus, it's all
not
it's
to
all
mention
connected.
It's unsightly. Not that you would never do it for that reason, which is why they said, no, it's too expensive. But then once you realize how much liability you have
right.
for everything that's happening,
lives at risk,
it makes
yeah.
more sense
yeah.
to...
Yeah.
I like to bury all the wires. I've got some wires on my property that I look at it, it's ugh, you know, in the back running along.
I think the Kern family should sponsor an underground effort.
That's an idea.
A little mini infrastructure plan.
But it shouldn't go, you know, along the neighborhood and then down under mine.
You could
back
do that.
Up. Really?
Yeah. For enough money,
Joe,
you could do whatever you want.
You actually can do that. I know contractors will come in and bury the lines that go to the people's
It's possible. Just cost
Joe. Let me do a cost analysis. I'm going to do a cost
analysis just like Poppy.
And then they will stay where they
like
are.
Like Patty Poppy.
Patty Poppy.
Next on Squawk Pod.
You can see the need in different forms in every part of the country.
Fixing roads, bridges, and train tunnels, bipartisan deal, stalled on the tracks. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg.
What's not complicated is the need to get something big done on infrastructure, which is what the president and many Republicans and Democrats have agreed to do.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
Stand Andrew by.
This is Squawk Pod.
One, cue Andrew.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin along with Becky Quick and Joe Kernan.
Senate Republicans blocking the beginning of a debate on the bipartisan infrastructure bill. Well, that was to be expected. Yesterday's vote was only procedural and the chamber could take up the plan again as soon as Monday. Following the vote, the 22-member bipartisan group said in a statement that they've made significant progress on a deal and are close to a final agreement. Join us now with the White House's take and the road ahead for an infrastructure package. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, and I come up with it. It's Secretary Mayor Pete. That's what we were trying to go. We were trying to go back and forth. Is it Secretary Pete? Is it Mayor Pete? I think it's Secretary Mayor Pete. Does that work
I'll
for you?
I'll take it. I don't know if it rolls off the tongue, but I'll answer to that gladly.
But we know you as Mayor Pete, so Secretary Mayor Pete. Okay. Watch. Everybody's going to be doing this from here on out. Yesterday was sort of expected. It almost looked like Majority Leader Schumer was expecting it because he voted no so he could bring it up again. It was almost a foregone conclusion that it was not complete, not totally done, not all the kinks were worked out. So pushing it off till Monday. Was there any disappointment or it's going along as planned, Mr. Secretary?
Yeah, you're right. This was expected. And this is where we get to see the legislative process and all of its procedural complexity. But what's not complicated is the need to get something big done on infrastructure, which is what the president and many Republicans and Democrats have agreed to do. And I saw it myself. I was on the road last week, and you can see the need in different forms in every part of the country. From right there in New York, where you have the Hudson River tunnels, you got people depending on, the absolute state-of-the-art construction technology from 1910. Whether you look at Oregon and the safety improvements that they're trying to make on their roads, what needs to be done in Chicago to connect up the South Side, tribal lands in Arizona where they have serious safety issues because of underinvestment in roads. Literally every part of this country sees the need, and I think that's why you have this incredible level of bipartisan agreement. In fact, today the president and the vice president will be sitting down with labor and business leaders who on economic issues are very often on opposite sides, but are on the very same side right now, which is that we've got to get this bipartisan infrastructure framework through and to the president's desk for a signature.
We've had a couple of people from the other side on in the last couple of days. We had, you saw Kevin Brady, I don't know whether you're watching, he was on earlier. We'll get into some of his comments, but we also had Senator Portman, one of the lead negotiators on the GOP. He was on yesterday, and I think that, some of his colleagues are probably not happy with the senators on the Republican side that are going to go ahead with this. He said it's the right thing to do in terms of infrastructure, to do this first plan, the trillion-dollar plan.
This is the infrastructure package that is built from the middle out. It is totally bipartisan. It's very responsible. It has no tax increases, as you know. But it also funds something essential, which is the infrastructure that's crumbling around America. We know that our infrastructure is in tough shape.
But both Rob and Kevin Brady, both don't want it linked to that second $3.5 trillion, what you would call human infrastructure, Mr. Secretary.
The president, I think, probably killed this whole infrastructure package with that statement. And even though he's tried to walk it back, Speaker Pelosi and Senator Schumer have not. They are linking it, to the infrastructure. That's why there won't be bipartisan support.
Is it still linked? Will it be, in your view, would Speaker Pelosi require that to be done first before allowing the other one to go forward?
Well, it wasn't linked yesterday, right? The vote they took in the Senate was on the infrastructure piece. And I hear a lot of this talk about whether it's linked or whether it's paired, but nobody's been able to explain to me in clear terms exactly what that even means. I think this is more of a kind of art than a science. And frankly, that's more about the politics that different members have to worry about. And I respect that. But the basic idea here is, we're hoping that Republicans can vote with us on the stuff they can support, and then they'll vote against us on the part that they can't. Although I also want to say, I refuse to give up on the idea that at least some Republicans might come around and vote for Americans to have paid family leave, might come around and vote for us to cut child poverty in half by extending the child tax credit, might come around and vote for an idea like making sure 3- and 4-year-olds can get pre-kindergarten education, or that we can have community college. Those are the right thing to do. Economists tell us they'll grow the economy, but you're right. Right now, These are on two different paths. The infrastructure part we can do together. The other might be all Democrats.
Just a different angle on that thinking. We'd like to do a lot of things. And there was a more recent analysis of the $3.5 trillion that puts it, if you get rid of some of the tricks, puts it at $5 to $5.5 trillion. Add in the other trillion that we're talking about. And we are at about $6 trillion plus. The president was asked yesterday about the transitory nation at a town hall on a competing network, which I think was in Cincinnati, actually, mm-hmm. where I'm going to be headed soon. But he was asked to address the worries about inflation. Can you honestly tell me, Mr. Secretary, you don't have any, you wouldn't worry at all about layering another $6 trillion worth of debt, what that might do to the dollar, what it might do to input costs, what it might do across the board to our financial situation in the United States?
Well, of course, we need to watch carefully the balance in our economy and work to get it right. That's something we do in fiscal policy. It's something that the Fed does very well. I think it's one of the reasons why the latest report out from Moody's suggests that some of this talk about inflation is overdone. And the idea that this is too much, this is just what it takes to get the U.S. to the level we should have been at all along. Remember, we're not trying to get gold-plated water pipes to everybody. We're just trying to get ones that don't have any lead. We've fallen to 13th place, the richest, wealthiest economy, and biggest economy in the world, and not even in the top 10 in infrastructure. We've got to get this right.
Right. Well, now you're back to the trillion. There's the trillion in infrastructure where we're 13th, and then there's the $5 trillion of the wish list.
So let's look at this other stuff, right? I mean, the idea that the wealthiest country in the world can't come up with a policy to do paid family leave when pretty much every other country in the world, not even just the wealthy ones, already has it. The idea that the wealthiest country in the world can't maintain macroeconomic balance while having 3 and 4 year olds go to pre-K.
There's concerns that if your debt service gets too high, Ms. Secretary, there are concerns that your debt service gets high if interest rates eventually go up to where the overall growth of the economy is hurt for years, 5-10 years to go. And GDP is a point or two below what it would have been. So no one's trying to take anything away from anyone. They're just trying to strike a balance where you have the best, as you said, financial picture to try to grow GDP as quickly as you can, and everyone benefits. So there's a definite disagreement about how you get there, depending on which side of the aisle you're on.
Sure, yeah. I mean, we think we ought to get to that balance by making sure we collect the right amount of revenue, too. And what to us is a no-brainer.
Which also has some downside. Also has some downside on the more money that goes into the public sector versus staying in the private sector. Let me ask you about flights coming in from Europe. Do you think the DOT should change the requirements and start letting people in? Now that we've already got Delta, what's the rationale for keeping people from the UK or from Europe out when Delta's already here?
Yeah, well, first of all, I should be clear, it's not a DOT decision, but we are at the table in the interagency as these decisions are being made. Obviously, from a DOT perspective, we can't wait to have travel back to normal as much as possible, but it's got to be safe. And the idea of these restrictions, of course, is to make sure that there is a manageable flow while we're looking after all of the other public health imperatives. We got a lot of countermeasures now, ones we've been relying on all along, like masks, ones that we have that we didn't have last year, like the vaccine. But as you look at what's happening around the world, countries that have made a lot of progress now seeming to fall back, you look at the trouble we're having here in the U.S., obviously it's not going to be a straight path. What I will say is two things. First of all, nobody's going to be more delighted than me when we can safely restore more international travel. Number two, the biggest thing all of us can do to move into that world is to make sure that we have as many people here in the U.S. and, for that matter, around the world vaccinated as quickly as possible.
Mr. Secretary, we just spoke to Doug Parker, the CEO of American Airlines, and one of the questions I asked him was the idea of whether they would be supportive of vaccination mandates domestically. And I'd ask you the same question, because there are opportunities to create, if you will, forcing mechanisms for the public that would create real incentives for people to get vaccinated that it might not be. And one of them may be getting on airplanes.
So we don't believe in certainly the government forcing people to do anything like that. What you do see is private businesses making decisions about how to protect their customers and how to protect their workers. This is a big part of what it's taken to get the cruise industry back on track. And I think that's something that these companies will continue to need to explore and develop as we move forward.
Mr. Secretary, we know about GM recalling some of the Bolt vehicles, the electric vehicles that they have because of the potential for fire. They have a fix, but we've seen a few fires that have come even after the fix. What's the Department of Transportation doing to make sure that these cars are safe?
Look, our bottom line is safety, and that's especially true when it comes to the automotive industry and vehicles that people count on. That could be, there are new technologies and there are new issues that need to be assessed, but the fundamental concept is not new, which is that we want Americans to be able to know with total certainty that every part of a car, from the seatbelt to the engine, is going to be safe, and we look after that very rigorously with the standards that we have and expect industry to step up and meet those standards.
Secretary, is there any possibility of usage fees that could be somehow made more progressive to do some of this? That always seems like a pretty good idea. I mean, gas prices have gone up recently, but you look at inflation adjusted, there's some room there. Instead of trying to get everything just from new taxes, isn't it possible to do something with either a gas tax or usage fees? That's what we think about when we think infrastructure for transportation. Why not do it that way?
Well, a couple of reasons. One, the president believes strongly that Americans making less than $400,000 a year already are paying enough, more than enough. And a second reason is we don't have to, right? We found a way to fully fund the president's entire economic vision in a way that actually has a deficit going down in the out years. That was part of the original proposal of the American Jobs Plan. Without having to turn to these user fees, because there's so much money on the table in these loopholes, enforcement and other issues. A third point I would make, though, is we've reached such a level of disinvestment, such a level of backlog, that even if you had some ridiculously large increase in user fees, it wouldn't come anywhere close to meeting the need. So it wouldn't get us there. We don't have to go there in order to fund the program. It just doesn't add up right now. As part of the path forward. The last thing, I'm just to get a little more technical and philosophical, because I know this is a sophisticated audience. That pays
attention. Yeah, our viewers can handle it. Go ahead, Mr. Secretary.
You know, when you think about it, the user is not always the beneficiary. And if you look at what happens when an owner-operator of a truck is paying what they pay, And you map all the way through the value chain of, you know, certainly they benefit from being able to drive on a good road for their small business. But you think about where most of that value gets captured. It's actually more likely to be captured by the kind of large corporate entity that we're trying to make sure pays its fair share of federal income taxes than by the guy who's driving those goods along the road. So I think we do need to get to a new maybe level of philosophical conversation about how we fund a lot of these things in this country. But the bottom line right now in this plan is we don't have to go there.
And all those fat cat Tesla guys and those really nice Teslas would be laughing at the gas tax. They'd be like, what's up?
Well, no, I was just going to also, so while we're on taxes, yeah, part of the infrastructure plan included the IRS tax issue that we talked
about. Oh, you're going to go back? I hope you get audited. I hope you get audited. You keep pushing this
so hard. Well, no.
I hope to go after you.
No, Mr. Secretary, do you think there's any, I mean, no, but look, you either, by the way, you believe in law and order and you believe that you should enforce the law. But by the way, I had some people tweeting me saying, well, do you believe in taking, you know, shoplifters? And yes, by the way, we should enforce shoplifting in America, too.
You're not just going to target Tea Party groups.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? I mean, the example is not just like, it's not just do you go after every shoplifter. It's do you, at least when you catch them, make sure you get the goods back before they go out the door of the store, right? This isn't just about how harsh you are being with people who illegally cheat on their taxes. This is about making sure you actually get the revenue that they're supposed to be paying all along. And I have to say, you know, there's a reason why this is something that the president and the Republicans and the Democrats shook hands on, which is that it ought to be a no-brainer. But I guess when they took it back
to the caucus,
there was resistance.
It ought to be much more difficult to do it. Like some type of consumption tax, and that's what Brady was saying. Go in a bipartisan way, make sure that you change the laws that allow all this, whether you call it evasion or avoidance, just change it all so you don't have to enforce it.
But it's not the laws that are allowing the enforcement. It's the lack of resources in the IRS.
Right. Well, it's not gonna, it's out of the bill anyway, so maybe it goes back in. But the secretary, thank you. You're on like a speaking tour on this whole infrastructure thing. You're like a front man on it, and they got a pretty good guy doing it. You're smooth. You're good. Thank you.
It's part of the job, and I'm glad to do it. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
Great to see you.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up, the new AT&T looks a lot like the old AT&T.
At the end of the day, the good news here is that the fundamentals are actually in good place, Joe. For a long time, they were so distracted by these media assets that are now all being divested.
Axios's Sarah Fisher and Netflix recommendations when Squawk Pod is back.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod. AT&T reported quarterly earnings this morning, and the adjusted quarterly profit came in at 89 cents per share, beating estimates by 10 cents, with revenue also pretty much above forecasts. And AT&T saw better than expected customer additions in its wireless business, phones, and a lower than expected churn rate. AT&T has been shelling out billions of dollars to upgrade its networks to the 5G technology as demand for the faster service surges with people working from home and learning online. It also added nearly 3 million domestic subscribers to its various HBO services. Mayor of Easttown got a lot of buzz for sure, and raised forecast for global HBO Max subscribers to more than 70 million by the end of the year. So those numbers, the HBO numbers, are interesting because in May, AT&T said it would spin off its media content and create an entirely new global entertainment company with Discovery, making AT&T a core communications company once again. Here's Joe.
Joining us now to discuss more is Sarah Fisher, Axios media reporter. We can, I guess it comes under your umbrella for a little while longer. I guess telecom is part of media, Sarah, but sooner or later, it's going to be, huh?
Until when? Then it's over?
No, I'm saying that there's so many other things in media that Sarah would be ready to talk about.
That's true.
Like Netflix or like, I don't know, all these other things. And AT&T's now, you know, Sarah, one thing I think people forget, won't AT&T shareholders have a stake in how well Zaslav runs those assets? I mean, isn't that a potential upside? That's something that's not pointed out very often.
That's true. They will have some upside. And so that 2.7 million subscribers that they added this quarter matters. It also matters that they're lifting guidance. I think they said they think they'll have 70 million subscribers to HBO and HBO Max. So yes, it's good. But at the end of the day, AT&T, the good news here is that the fundamentals are actually in good place, Joe. For a long time, they were so distracted by these media assets that are now all being divested that we weren't hearing as much important notice about things like the postpaid phone subscriber additions or their fiber additions, the lowest churn rate ever for Q2 and fiber this quarter. It's great. For the first time, we're hearing great things about the fundamentals. We're not being distracted by this media stuff that, quite frankly, is not going to be as important to their business long term.
And there's talk about spinning off or selling or somehow getting rid of Xander because it doesn't make sense anymore.
No, definitely doesn't make sense. We had a report about that earlier this week. And what's sad about it is they spent a lot of money, I think $1.6 billion on AppNexus, few hundred million dollars on other investments. And they're probably going to sell it, Joe, for, I'm hearing, way less than $1 billion. It's going to be likely some sort of fire sale if they don't write it off. And so that's been the weird thing about AT&T. They actually are doing well in phone and internet in their core business, but there's been so much distractions about all these other side things that they need to spin out in order to get back to 5G.
How about Netflix? Disappointing or about as expected, given that we knew how the pandemic had affected content, the ability to produce new content, and
and people leaving, you know, going to live sporting events or live venues instead of staying at home. So all those things were factored in. Still a, you know, still $500 stock that, you know, that any media company could have bought 5 years ago for a tenth of that, probably.
For nothing. Yeah, no, I think I actually was disappointed, and I'll tell you why. Earlier this year, they said that we forecast the growth to come at the back end of this year, 2021, so Q3, Q4. But the guidance for Q3 was pretty low, Joe. I mean, 3.5 million ads is not that much. You know, I think what made the street happy about Netflix, which is why you saw that stock whipsaw after earnings, was that they're starting to invest in new tricks. Obviously, gaming is the big one, but they're investing in things like podcasts and merchandising to make their franchises more Disney-like, right? More sticky. So I think that the street was excited about that. But ultimately, I do think that subscriber growth is slowing down, and it's a problem for Netflix.
Yeah. They talk about the firehouse approach. I think they need to be more... I need really quality content, not just, you know, you just don't roll out some crappy movie and, you know, that's not working for me. And that's what they're doing to some extent.
I agree. Maybe,
yeah, you do? Got anything good?
I think that little N, which signifies a Netflix original, I just glaze right over it. And that's a problem for Netflix.
Right. They need to ramp it up. Spend some more. You seen Dr. Death yet, Sarah, on Peacock?
No, but I'll add it to my list. You always give me good recs, Joe.
Only if you can sit there and watch someone just totally butcher an operation with blood and guts, and it's hard to watch, but it's great. Christian Slater, Alec Baldwin, it's pretty good. All right. See you later, Sarah. Thanks. The more things change,
the more they stay the same.
Content-wise, didn't someone say content is king like 50 years ago? Has it ever been more true? Would you like to be a really talented, creative writer-type producer, person right now? I mean,
I would like to.
You've got 20 people
kind of is
begging, throwing money. I mean, it's the ultimate buyer, seller, whatever you call the writing team. It's their time. It's their time. All those dollars chasing, because there are really good people. Look at some of the things we've watched in recent years. They're amazing. When you watched Breaking Bad, weren't you
the
like,
greatest?
Just blown away.
The greatest.
Who came up with some of those things?
Vince Gilligan, the greatest.
Right.
And that's Squawk Pod for today. Let us know what you're watching on your favorite streaming platform. Tweet us Rex or any comments at Squawk CNBC. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern to get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears. Listen and follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.